everyone.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep. And then we always just use a Bakersfield as a reference.
Yeah.
Because that's a little more well known.
How many people live in Tehachapi?
The greater Tehachapi area, probably about 30 to 35,000 in the whole greater area. But the actual city limits, I think, is like what? I think it's 13,000.
13? Has it got a college town? Has it got a college there?
No.
No?
Actually, opened like a small, very small community college, Saracoso.
Yeah, that's right.
Gotcha.
We were tiny.
We were talking earlier, one of my good buddies, Jason Schillinger, is from that town, and you guys know Jason.
Yeah,
which is crazy small.
Kid. Yeah. He did all my taxidermy work when I was a kid.
Yeah, he's mounted a ton of stuff. The bear behind us, he mounted. A bunch of stuff in the office he mounted for me.
He did that bear?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Small world.
Small world. Very small world.
Hmm. Yeah, have you seen his new shop? He's got a nice new shop now.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Legitimate. Like, beforehand, he was doing it over the garage.
Yeah, because when I was there before, it was literally his like garage area. Which his garage is set up pretty nice.
Pretty well.
He has like the upstairs, the loft area and everything. Yeah. But
now he's got like a steel building.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, with like big roll-up and big old shop and bunch of box freezers. And
it's
pretty
nice.
Yeah, he's got a lot more dialed now.
Hmm. I feel like a taxidermy shop would be a pretty sick gig.
I agree.
Whenever I stop and talk to Jeff down there, he's got like his own little living quarters, his own little shop. He just works whenever he feels like it. I feel like I should have gone into taxidermy. What do you think?
I think you should have. I thought about it back in the day.
You did?
Yeah, when I was in high school, I kind of wanted to learn and like go underneath someone and try to do it. But then I was like, maybe this ain't for me. But I don't know. It's one of those things where I just should have like taken the leap and done it because I would have enjoyed
it. You're kind of artsy like that.
Yeah. Skinning muskrats and coons and beavers back in the day. I was pretty handy with the knife. Figured I could maybe hold my own. But
yeah,
I tried to tan a mule deer hide once.
Didn't work?
That didn't go over too well. I bought one of those like books and I was like trying to learn and
like brain tan it?
No, not brain tan it, but it was like some sort of other thing to use. Can't remember what exactly it was.
I got an uncle that did, he taught American Indian studies, like high school, and he did a full deer hide one time, like traditional way. It was a ton of work, but it ended up really cool.
Yeah.
They did it as part of like a class project. I've always wanted to do it since, but not bad enough, obviously.
Yeah. So what ended up happening with your deer hide that you tried it on?
So I tried it and it ended up getting really stiff. And then I kept trying to like, maybe I didn't flush it good enough. I'm like, well, now I probably can't flush it again. So now I've already started putting some chemicals on there to try to actually tan it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sat in my garage for a little bit. And then I finally realized that maybe it's starting to stink in my garage. So I donated it back to the mountains. But I had a friend down the road in Kalispell, because I was living in Columbia Falls at the time in Montana, and he would do brain tanning. And I would go over to his place, and he was like Pope and Young scorer, so I'd shoot all my animals, and he'd always score it, and I'd go into his shop, and I was like, that would be the way to do it. I should have actually like learned from him first on that method, because I was just doing it by myself. But the way he did it, had like old school stretchers and everything like that for the hide. Like, that guy has some skills. Still time to learn, I know. I do have a garage. I do have a lot of free time.
Maybe a spring bear, huh?
Dude, I don't know if I trust in a spring bear.
Not so
much. You can make some side money.
Yeah.
Pay for some hunts.
I do like leathers. Like, I have a lot of leathers at home. Like, just old antelope that my great-great-grandpa shot. Like,
yeah.
It'd be cool to start keeping some more of that stuff and making random things.
Yeah, I have to make you some buckskins. Start hunting in those.
Yeah. I've always thought of this crazy idea of, like, I really want, like, this most ridiculous, like, man cave chair. Like, I want it like
a chair?
Elk antlers. Yeah.
You mean like a throne?
A throne, yeah.
Okay, not a chair.
A chair, yeah. A throne is a better way to put it. Uh-huh. Like, elk antlers, like down the side. Maybe some like moose, smaller like caribou paddles, maybe for your arm thing.
There you go.
Moose paddles on the back.
You could just e scout in it.
Yeah. Antler hide on the seat and the cushion. Just like some giant ass paddles off the back. Like,
knowing you, it's got to be big enough to sleep in, though.
Basically, Game of Thrones style, but take it all like antlers. To establish a presence, you know.
I can see that for you.
I think that'd be great. And sitting in an e-scout, you'd like be one with the animal, you know. Think harder,
because have you have hide all against your skin there.
Yeah.
Gotta get started.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna do this.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a costly chair.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of concerned about. And I don't shed hunt, so I need to probably get on that and find some sheds and find some caribou paddles, like something for the armrest. You know, it has to be legit. But I think that's why a paddle of something would be nice. A
couple of moose paddles.
That's what I was thinking. Elk coming down to
the inside.
Just a chair.
Yeah, I could see that.
Definitely have to have some mule deer on it.
You could punch some holes in it, a little cup holder.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
You just carve them in like a paddle.
You could watch the Lakers from it.
Oh, yeah. That'd be really good. They've been doing good lately.
Yeah, they have been. So we're going to dive into the reason we had you guys on. We're going to talk your doll sheep hunt.
Yeah.
I guess before we dive into that, do you want to hit us with the promo code, Brady?
Definitely can hit us with the promo code. So, yeah, we're in March right now. We have a lot of apps open, a lot of big apps coming up.
Still so many to come this year.
We got Colorado, Montana.
Utah.
Utah is going to be a big one. New Mexico is knocking on the door here in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
And so now it's time to do your research. So everything you need to find a hunt, filtering, draw odds, app strategies, we have it on Insider. So use promo code PODCAST when you sign up for an Insider account. We're going to give you 50 points back to the Go Hunt Gear Shop. That's $50 to spend on anything gear related. And then you'll get access to all of our research tools, access to Go Hunt maps, do some e-scouting while you're trying to do your research. Mm-hmm. And you'll find some tags to put in your pocket this year.
We took a little tour of the warehouse just now.
Oh, did you guys find anything you liked?
Well, there's always stuff that I like.
Brad was saying he spends too much money out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can attest to that?
I would say that's probably true.
Yeah. Well, you always need something, right?
She's a good sport, though. She always says yeah.
Yeah.
Do you hunt at all?
Yeah, a little bit.
You do?
I've killed a couple bucks, a couple mule deer. Yes.
So you from California originally?
Yeah, I was born in Long Beach.
Okay.
Yeah, I was born in Long Beach and actually was really big into saltwater fishing growing up. That's what my dad did.
Like fishing or like spearfishing?
It's fishing. Yeah. Yeah. So, and growing up in Southern California, it was pretty readily available to go saltwater fishing. But then when we moved when I was six, it wasn't. It turned into like it would be, instead of it being like every month, it was every year, once a year, then every couple years. And then I got into hunting when I was 12 because of my brother-in-law, actually. And in that, it was like ever since then, I didn't even care about fishing. It was just like, forget it.
Yeah. What were you fishing for?
Tuna, Dorado. We'd go down to Mexico, like take a boat out of San Diego and then go down to Mexico.
What's a big tuna for that?
A couple hundred pounds.
Oh, really?
What? Yeah.
I was thinking like these 30, 40 pound fish.
Yeah, yeah, that's more common.
Okay.
But like a big one.
A big one
would be 100. Yeah, 150, 180.
You eating all these stuff too then?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah, tuna's so delicious.
Hmm.
Yeah.
You ever wanted to do that?
I kind of have.
Yeah, I have too.
It's a ton of fun.
I really like being in the ocean and fishing.
Yeah.
And like doing random stuff I don't get to do because I want to learn from people who are more experienced than I am. And it's like, why do you do the things you do? And like, you know, incorporate that into my, I don't know.
Did you guys have a boat? Did your dad have a boat?
No, we'd always just charter a boat, get a group of guys and like charter a whole boat. And then, but it is a pretty cool experience when you get like a school of tunas and a deckhand will jump on top of the bait tank and just start throwing bait to keep them on the surface water and boiling.
Mm-hmm.
And man, you just throw it when they get that hot, you could throw a hook out there and they'll just grab it.
Really?
Yeah. I had one time I remember putting a sardine on and throwing it out and it didn't even hit the top of the water and a tuna jumped out and grabbed it before it hit the top of the surface of the water.
I think I'm gonna have to watch some YouTube videos after and like see this stuff in action because I'm envisioning it in my head, but I don't know. It sounds so fun.
Did you ever watch that show on, is it the History Channel? What is it? Tuna? Wicked Tuna. You ever watch Wicked
Our
Tuna?
Our son loves that show.
Really?
He loves
so
it.
It's a great show. For
he was
tuna.
So excited.
Remember, I live on a rock.
You've never seen Wicked Tuna?
No, never heard of it.
That's great, man. Yeah, those guys are going out tuna fishing.
They're writing this in my notes right now as we talk. There we go. Learn something new.
Wicked Tuna.
Wicked Tuna.
Mm-hmm. You'd enjoy it, I bet.
Yeah, it's a good show. You'd be into it for sure. So when you were 12, you started hunting?
Yep. We started hunting when I was 12. And then it was like I shot my first buck. And then ever since then, it's been just a passion. Like, you know, everything, you know, she could contest to it. I pretty much reading forums, listening to podcasts, anything and everything, just continue to educate myself.
Gotcha. Eat, sleep, breathe, live, hunting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
100%. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Aside from my wife and my son, if it wasn't hunting, I feel like there's like no purpose in life.
Right. I love that.
How long have you guys been married?
10 years.
10?
Yeah.
Are you from California?
Yeah.
How'd you guys meet?
At a Christmas party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a company Christmas party?
Or? No. Oh, no. Oh. Like a house Christmas party.
Dang.
No. Like a house Christmas party.
Yep.
Oh. I was 19.
Okay.
And Yeah, we've just basically been together ever since. Pretty much inseparable.
What do you do for a living full time?
I'm a wastewater treatment plant operator. So
okay.
Yeah, I just work at a wastewater treatment plant and make shitty water good water.
The number one man in the number two business.
There you go.
What does the job entail, if you don't mind me asking?
So a lot of it's going to be like taking readings, doing math, taking readings, graphing stuff because you have to report to the state, chlorine, like dosing stuff, chemicals and stuff, and then some like maintenance, hands-on maintenance and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So is tap water okay to drink in Las Vegas in California, would you know?
Well, I mean, that's more of the water side, but yeah, I mean, it is, and definitely in California, it's treated to a high standard, obviously, and it has to be tested weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And if something goes wrong, like it has to be, the residents not only have to be notified, but also you could potentially have to shut down that source. So it is held to a standard, but it is typical to be treated at some point, like chlorine or something like that. So you are consuming some dose of chlorine.
I know my kids, when they come to Vegas, they're not big fans of tap water. Which, I mean, yeah. Cedars probably isn't that much better, but like where I grew up in Circleville, Beaver, if you ever drive past Beaver, they got the big sign there on the side of the highway, voted best water in America.
Voted.
Oh, really?
Voted.
Voted.
Yeah.
By the nation.
By the nation, the entire nation. More voters than we got for the election. Best water in the nation.
I'm going to stop in. So next time you're in
Beaver, next time you're in Beaver, best water ever.
Huh. I will say, like, our personal water, though, we do filter it to filter out any chlorine and stuff.
Do you?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Do you work?
Nope.
No?
No.
Stay at home, mom?
Yep.
You have kids, right?
Yeah.
Kids?
Yeah, a kid.
One. A kid?
Yep. Okay. Bennett, yep.
Bennett, is that how you guys met? You came in contact with GoHunt? That was one thing I wanted to talk about, was what was your kind of your relationship with GoHunt, and how did you guys get involved with, you know, going on a sheep hunt and us getting involved?
So it's probably 2019 or 2020. Lorenzo had turtle, mm-hmm. and he had posted about it, and I was like following him on Instagram or whatever. He posted about it, and like my son is a micro preemie. He was born at 26 weeks. He was born 1 pound, 2 ounces.
Wow.
And so obviously being in that world is kind of really kind of like the hunting industry and the hunting world. When you start getting involved, it's pretty tight knit overall. Mm-hmm. So when you get into that kind of scope of medical needs for your child, it's pretty tight knit as well. And so he had posted something, and obviously I was interested in turtle's outcome and you know, his setbacks in life were. And him and I started talking, and then he gave me his number, and we started talking more, and I'd share about my son, he'd share about his. And then that was over the course of probably, you know, I don't know, a few months or so. And then I had said that I was getting ready to book a sheep hunt. You know, I'd saved up my money, and it was like something that was very mm-hmm. near and dear to me. And then that my buddy Calvin Connor was coming along to film, and that's when he was like, hey, we would love to have the opportunity to premiere that and talk with you and stuff. So
gotcha.
That's how I met Lorenzo, was social media, really,
right.
But in the interest of his son and whatnot.
Hmm. So did you say 1 pound?
2 ounces.
2 ounces.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
A little pound of butter.
Really?
So tiny.
Hmm.
11 tiny. Inches long. Yep.
And what was that like? I mean, what was the whole process? I mean, I can't imagine it was your first child, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was
one and only.
Pretty scary.
Yeah, it was scary.
The day he was born, we went to the doctor because she was having some medical issues.
Preeclampsia.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And, I'll never forget, the doctor kept measuring and measuring and measuring the same spot. And then he shut off the screen, and he was like, turned to us, and he was like, your son needs to be born. And I was like, well, yeah.
Yeah, eventually, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're thinking?
And he's like, no.
Today.
Like, yeah, today. He's like, if you could come to my hospital, I think you'd get a better chance of life. So he was born, we got there at, what time did we get there? Like
2 or 3, and he was born by like 4:45 or something.
But he was scheduled to be an emergency C-section at 11 o'clock at night. So they were like, things are not going good.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
So, totally terrifying.
And then they wouldn't allow me to be in the room or be there. They didn't even come and get me or anything or tell me.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't even know until after he was born.
Yeah.
They're like, you can come see your son. He's in the NICU.
Oh, my gosh.
Really?
And then he
really
spent
scary.
7 days, 8 days?
I think 10 days in Santa Barbara where he was born. And
then
they
got
airlifted him to Cedars-Sinai in L.A. just because he needed a neurosurgeon and had to have some brain surgeries. And so they didn't have that. So away he went.
Then we spent
10
four
days
months
old
there.
In a helicopter.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
So, yeah, but he's doing really great.
He is.
How old is he now?
He's almost 8.
Okay.
Yeah, very he's good. Doing awesome. Wow.
And what's his name?
Bennett.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a lot. Win. Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, my oldest child was, you know, we were full term, and they induced her and just wasn't working. And middle of the night, I remember listening to Heartbeat because she'd been, you know, we'd been there forever, probably like 15, 16 hours at that point. Mm-hmm. Nothing was happening, right? And I remember listening to the heart rate monitor, and I remember when I went and grabbed a nurse, and I just was like, man, his heart rate just does not sound right. And they were like, yeah, you're kind of right. So they came in, checked him out, and they said, I think we should do an emergency C-section. And I'm not trying to relate this to what you guys went through at all, not even in the slightest, but we emergency C-section. I just remember feeling completely, it was my first child, I've got three boys, but just completely helpless. You just feel just helpless. It's like, it was the worst feeling in the world. So I cannot imagine. To go with you guys through what you went through.
Yeah, he's doing, I mean, he has the areas of his brain, you know, he has some damage, but you get the brain's amazing. You can retrain it, you know, and so he walks with a walker. Mm-hmm. He's working on canes. Mm-hmm. He doesn't speak, but he uses a tablet for communication.
Oh. And he is good on that thing.
Really? Yeah.
He is incredible. He can spell like anything. It's amazing.
Huh.
So you can fully communicate with you via the tablet?
100%. Yeah. It's incredible.
And then the tablet speak?
It speaks it.
Okay.
So he writes whatever he wants on it and then just has to hit it and it says a whole sentence or whatever. It's incredible.
This is a full learning process then for both of you, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody.
I'm still learning it, I think.
Huh. That's good. I'm glad he's doing good, though.
He's doing it. Really great.
That's awesome.
A lot of fun.
Very cool.
So that's how I remember I would send, because we take him to therapy, you know, we want to try to give him the best opportunity of life. And like, my ultimate dream is to be able to hunt with my son.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so I would always share with Lorenzo videos and stuff of him at therapy and stuff. And it was pretty cool, you know, to have that. It's nice and refreshing to have someone that can kind of relate, I guess, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I know he's gone through some struggles with his son.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has.
It's really cool how tight knit the hunting community is.
It
like
really
you said,
is.
You just basically met on social media and you guys share numbers and, you know, talking back and forth and having this connection.
Yeah. Not all bad social media, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
There's sometimes some good positive to it.
Yeah. Can you get him, does he like the outdoors? You get him out into the outdoors?
He loves to be outside. So he has cerebral palsy, so it makes it a little challenging, but he really enjoys being outside. We have a pack for him. We hike him all over the place, and he likes it.
You able to carry him? Like, do you have like a pack carrier? How does that work?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have like a special pack.
Okay. Yeah.
It's actually, what was it? It was actually designed for like up to 110 pounds or something.
Yeah. It's these guys wanted to take their disabled friend backpacking. And so they built a backpack and I think it's 180 pounds.
Okay.
Something like that. It's pretty high.
But it adapts for like size and stuff.
Yeah.
I can carry him still for now. We'll see how long that lasts because he's tall, but
it's good springtime training for me.
Exactly. Yeah. I bet. So you're able to get out and do backpacking a little bit and some camping and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I know, like where we live, we have a peak, an 8,000-foot peak in my backyard.
Uh-huh.
And a number of people have never even, like, hiked it, but Bennett's been there.
He's been there, he's been there a couple
times. That's super cool.
Yep.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, and in this past year, she was like, I want to, my goal is that I pack him from the truck, the trailhead, all the way to the top, and it's like 5,700 feet to 8,000. And I think it's a 2.5 mile hike to the top.
It's
pretty steep.
I think
some good steepness. It's good for training. And she was like, I'm going to do it all the way. And she did it this year. She packed him all the way from the truck to the top.
That's awesome.
We're not going to let anything hold him back.
Nope.
So.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
Get him out there.
So part of the name of the, I assume you've seen the film.
I've seen the rough cut.
Okay,
it's gotcha. The original rough cut.
Okay.
It looked like it probably needed some more work because it had like mm-hmm. missing sound in a lot of the areas. Right. So, but
have you heard a working title? A name of the film?
Omar mentioned that he
Memories from Home.
Yeah.
Memories for Home. That's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah. I was curious as to the title Memories from Home. Like, what does that mean to you? Like, why Memories from Home? And I mean, what was the reason kind of behind wanting to go on this sheep hunt?
Well, the reason to go on this doll sheep hunt is for some reason when I was 12, I remember being just obsessed with doll sheep and being like so naive to hunting and young that I would research it. And I was like always wanting to go, but I was like, how am I ever going to, 12, 13 years old, how am I going to be able to ever just swing this and go to Alaska? And then I remember to the extent that I looked up and I found like Texas doll. And I was like, oh, I could go to Texas.
Texas doll.
Yeah. I was like, this, and then later the on, same. Obviously, yeah, it's very far from. Yeah.
Do they have dolls in Texas?
It's one of those like other sheep species.
It's
like,
exotic.
Yeah, but it's not a doll sheep.
Not a doll. No,
I'm like, it wouldn't shock me if they had one of those ones that's just
like curl to it. Yeah, but, gotcha. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But being naive and young, I was like, oh, this is my way to kill a sheep.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously growing up and realizing that that's not the same.
Do you ever know anyone like friend, family, whoever went sheep hunting before?
Nope. So, yeah, it was just.
Do you remember seeing doll sheep in a magazine or a book, or what was it about doll sheep that captivated your imagination?
Well, I remember watching some videos and just like the how brutal the hunt can be, you know, and the backpack aspect of it, and guys flying in and stuff. And intrigued me. And then like the reason to get it filmed was I wanted to share it with my son.
Mm.
Like that was pretty near and dear to me. I wanted to be able to like. Not only share it with my son, but share it with my wife and them to try to be, for him to be with me on the hunt with his limited mobility and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, you know, Calvin went and filmed it and then he made me my own personal film.
Mm.
And my son loves watching it. It's so funny. He'll get on his tablet.
He goes, I want to watch Dad's show.
Dad's show? Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so perfect.
It's great.
And he loves the plains. He loves cubs.
Yeah, I mean,
who doesn't?
Yeah, all people, kids, anything. Like, I love them. I just like watching.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll watch random ones on YouTube all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Guys flying around.
Instagram, I'm just like, sit there and watch them all the time because it's so awesome. But so he'll want to watch that. He loves watching that scene back and forth over and over, just them flying and stuff. But yeah, he enjoys watching it. It was something that was kind of near to me to share it with him. And then. Additionally, just, yeah, I don't know why exactly, but something about sheep hunting and doll sheep in particular. For me, it was like the pinnacle hunt for me to kill a doll.
Yeah. I think it's just like the scenery, the mountains, like you said, the struggle,
the
how to get to camp, you know, how to get animals out of there, like all that stuff combined. It is, like you said, the pinnacle.
Yeah. I mean, the logistics alone, I mean, you take a commercial flight there, then you take a 206, then you take a cub, you know, and then you hike 6-7 miles in, set up your camp, like so the logistics.
At what point did you started to put this hunt together?
In 2019 I was fortunate enough to help a guy drew a desert sheep tag in California in a new unit, and I was able to help him on a hunt. And he was 82 years old. He suffered from a stroke and he had limited mobility, where it would take us probably over an hour to go 100 yards.
Oh, wow.
And we got him a ram, and it was a struggle. But afterwards, I was sitting talking to him, and he was like, the one thing that he said was, I wish I would have gone sooner. And I wish, because now I'll never kill a doll. I'll never kill. And I went home to her and I was said, I need to figure this out, because I don't want to be 82 years old saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's the advice I've heard from literally everyone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My dad went and killed his first doll. He's like, yeah, if you can do this, do it sooner.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Bennett would have been 5 at the time, 4 or 5?
When?
6?
When at 2020 when I booked it. 2019, yeah. 4? So you've been 4? Like 4.
Right.
Yep.
So I came home to her and she was like, well, let's figure it out.
You weren't like, you're crazy?
Oh, no. A couple of weeks ago, he said, you send me on my hunts and my sheep hunt. I'm like, yes, yes, I did. I sent you on your sheep hunt. I did it.
I will say this. When we first started dating, though, I told her, I was like, hey, hunting's very important to me. And if this is going to be an issue or a hindrance,
hit the road,
then we might as well just like, let's just end it now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, let's not waste time.
Huh. Sending it right up front. I like it.
Yep.
Do you hear that, Brady? That's what I need to do.
Take note.
All right, I will.
Then they know. Like they bought into it.
Yeah. Exactly. Know like your passion. It's a big thing.
I'm gonna be gone.
Yeah. The being gone thing, that's definitely hard part.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially with a young child with some health issues. It's probably a lot to consider.
And in the first few years, I didn't go out of state. Local. I stayed local and home. Mm-hmm. And in 2020, she was on board. I went to Sheep Show, and I was like, I really wanted to go to the Alaska Range. I think it was because of the videos I had seen when I was younger and stuff. It was real important to me to go to the Alaska Range. And there wasn't really any outfitters that I felt like great about. So I was actually on Instagram afterwards, and I actually found the outfitter I went with, and I had a great connection with him, and he was just a solid guy, Justin DeBay.
In fact, you're wearing his hat.
Yep. And
what is his guide service called?
Kokanee Guide Service.
Okay.
He's a small operation, but he's just a really solid guy. And
so you talked to other outfitters and just didn't feel like you had a right fit?
Yeah, it just didn't feel right.
Yeah, I tell people that a lot. People call and they'll ask for guide recommendations, whether they're looking for an elk hunt or a deer hunt or whatever it might be. And I always told them or tell them if they reach out. I think it's important for people to contact several guides and outfitters and kind of find out who you connect with. Because, I mean, you're going to spend potentially, 10, 15 days hunting sheep or on an elk hunt. And you don't have chemistry with everybody. You need to have somebody that's like-minded with you, that wants to hunt the way that you want to hunt. They kind of understand the things that are important to you. And I do think it's important to establish that connection to find the right fit for the hunt that you're going on. So it's interesting to hear you say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Because I feel like too, when you're on those type hunts, especially such a remote hunt, you really get to know a true person, And so having that a good, smooth relationship with someone that you feel comfortable with, I think that helps too, you know?
Do you remember what it was about this person that you kind of connected with?
Him and I were like two peas in a pod, I guess. Like, had so much in common.
Like you'd known him your whole life.
Yeah, almost. Like we could just really relate with each other. And he was basically he was so calm and relaxed about things. And I think that's key too,
When you book with it, so a sheep hunt isn't cheap.
No.
How do you put together financially a sheep hunt?
It's a lot of saving.
A lot of sacrificing. I didn't go buy a new truck. I had a Toyota Tacoma with over 200,000 miles. That was, 12, 13 years old.
Mm-hmm. And saving everywhere you can, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I could have easily took that money and went and bought a new truck.
Yeah.
And instead I was like, I'd much rather hunt than have a brand new truck.
Little things though. Like we don't eat out. We hardly eat out.
If we're traveling, we'll eat out.
Well, because you have to.
Yeah.
But even then, actually, when we travel, we normally take snacks.
We take food with us.
Yeah, that's smart. Like just all those random stops at gas stations and random food, like that all adds up. It really does. When you calculate that, like how much traveling you do a year and
even our coffee, we take a French press and we'll make coffee.
Yep.
So we don't buy coffee.
How long did it take you to save up?
I booked the hunt in 2020 and I was scheduled to go to 23 and then I got pushed to 22 and I had the opportunity to go to 22, which I'm glad I did because the unit I ended up hunting, they closed down to non-residents for 5 years. So I guess, before I did that, I was like, can we financially swing it? And she was like, we'll figure it out. And so I guess 2 years, it took me 2 years to save it. Yeah.
Did you have a little savings account that you set aside? Yep.
Yeah. And it's just like, I just paid like a payment
every
to myself.
Month?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's smart.
I never touched it. I mean, like even I used to chew Copenhagen Long Cut. Mm-hmm. Like it was going out of style like every day. I'd go through like a can and at like $7-$8 bucks a can. That's a lot of money.
It is.
It adds up.
And so I quit. It helped my health and it also saved a lot of money.
Yeah. No more monsters, cut out monsters.
Energy drinks,
save money.
Got rid of those. I just started looking at where
we had any extra unnecessary expense
and just got rid of it.
And this is where I think most people, they think like, oh, but these hunts are so unobtainable. But like you're saying, you can make little small sacrifices, small.
Yep.
But then it could add up over time.
Exactly.
Like even if you start doing it right now and you're like, oh, five years, 7 years from now, I'm going to do a big crazy hunt. Well, mm-hmm. 5 years of doing that, saving up, like I said, coffee, anything else, eating out, like you can make things happen.
Well, and then also just like booking out as far as you can.
Yeah.
Locking in that price, booking it out. If you could do it 5 years, book it for 5 years in advance. That gives you 5 years to save and you're locked in at that price.
Did you ever look at that little savings account and think, kitchen cabinets,
never,
new tires?
No, he loves it so much. It's like super rewarding for me too, to see him achieve a dream. So no. Never.
Wow.
Go again. I'll save in another one. Start saving.
That's pretty cool.
Alive. Yeah. I don't know how this. Wow.
I got lucky.
That's incredible.
I got a great girl.
Thank you.
That's really awesome.
It's like a family thing though. Like it's cool to see you achieve your dream. So it's really neat.
That's awesome. So you got the hunt booked. Brady's good. You sure?
Yeah, I'm good right now. I appreciate you.
But yeah, background. I always speak over Brady, so I always try to give him a little. You got something?
Mm-hmm.
Once you get the hunt booked, do you have dates? Like he says, did he ever call you and say, hey, are you ready to go? Or did you have it like booked out? You're like, I'm going these dates.
Yeah, it was booked out. I had the option of like first hunt or second hunt because he only does 2 hunts a year.
Okay.
And I wanted to be the opening day hunt.
Okay. What time of year were August?
Yeah, August 10th is opening day.
Okay.
So then, but he had me show up on the 5th in case there's weather. So that was another thing too. He's like, I want you to show up on the 5th so that it's a lot better to be stuck out in the field in weather waiting for it to clear than stuck in Anchorage waiting to fly out and it being multiple days. Mm-hmm. So I scheduled that, got there on the 5th and we got out, I think the 7th and then, got out to the field the 7th or 8th, and then we stayed on the airstrip and then hiked out from there, and we got to do a couple days of scouting and looking around. And then went ahead and we hunted that area. We found a ram, but it was just like 3/4 to 1/2 inch of sublegal, or it was sublegal by 3/4 of an inch.
Had you been to Alaska at all? Ever?
No.
No, never?
No, that was my first time.
For first trip.
And I fell in love with it.
Yeah. How'd you go about gear prep for this hunt, being your first Alaskan hunt and pretty rugged, remote?
Well, I asked, Lorenzo helped me with my boot selection, actually. And then I watched a lot of videos. And then I talked to previous clients and asked a lot of questions.
He's wearing Alverstones. I saw that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
One of my favorite pairs of boots.
Yep. They've been really good to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good pair of boots.
And now they've been on multiple sheep hunts, and they've been holding up. I'm probably ready or due for a new pair, but.
what was the one most important piece of gear you brought?
Most important gear that I brought?
That's probably a loaded question, because every piece of gear we take to Alaska is pretty essential.
Yeah. Actually, one piece of gear that I really liked and enjoyed was I took that new Terminus pack right when they came out with it, and I was apprehensive to not take a cover for it, but I didn't, and it worked flawless.
Yeah, because of that new
material. Yeah, yeah. Watertight.
Yeah, I just didn't know if I could trust it though. But they reassured me.
Just take it out in the backyard and hose it down real quick first.
I actually did, and the only thing that water seeped in was the little hip pouches.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Everything got wet in there, but other than the pack, everything stayed dry. And it was really nice because everyone would have to stop, take their pack, get their cover off, put it on, take it off. And I just like, well, let's keep going.
Yeah.
You got to save some time.
How are you feeling when you got to Alaska? Were you excited? I mean, what is that like? You start dreaming when you're a 12-year-old kid.
I was super excited and I just didn't even know like what to expect, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, like the weather and stuff. I mean, even on the hunt on the way back, I didn't even understand or fully grasp the fact that how much weather plays a role. Yeah, you know, we got hung up. It's like a 130-mile flight back towards Anchorage, a little airport outside of Anchorage. And it took us almost 2 days because of weather.
Wow.
We had to do like an emergency. We actually did an emergency landing on a mining airstrip out there, and a black bear ran in front of us. This is where we were landing. Almost drilled a black bear.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, if you've never been to Alaska, that's the thing I tell everybody. I've been a few times. I've been fortunate enough, but I've lost weather days every time I've been there.
Yeah.
It's, in fact, I've told people now, I only book, if I go to Alaska, I book a one-way flight. I don't book my returning flight, because the first time I ever did, I ended up sitting on a boat in Larsen Bay, you know, worried about my flight, and just kept having to like reschedule and try to reschedule. And it works out way better if you just book a one-way flight. You get up there, you go out and hunt, and then when you get back into town, you know, air into service, book your flight, and then fly home. Because you just, I've never been to Alaska where I didn't lose days to weather.
Yeah, I went back this past year in 23 as a packer and worked for the outfitter and on a doll sheep hunt. I did exactly what you said. I just booked a one-way because I learned that quickly as well. On my first one, it was like trying to jockey flights back after you already booked it. It's just a headache. Stressful. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
You're going to end up paying the extra money anyway then.
Yeah.
So it's not even worth it.
Yeah. Huge pain. I remember sitting on a boat in Larsen Bay, just panicked. I'm like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do with my flights. And I'm trying to correlate with my wife and try to get things scheduled. It's just a pain in the butt. So.
Yeah. That's one thing I'd recommend, just doing it one way.
Yeah.
How'd you get in touch with Calvin?
He actually hunted with Justin in 2019. So they had a relationship, and then Justin put me in contact with him, and now we're like great friends.
Yeah, sounds like you guys hit it off and spent time with him.
Yeah.
Recently here. And
We spend time with each other, and we try to do at least one hunt together every year now.
Mm-hmm. It was important to you that you filmed it, right? I
mean, yeah.
From the get-go? Was that always the plan?
That was always the plan.
Yeah, it was always the plan to film it so I could share it with her and my son, and Calvin did a great job of getting the material. And
yeah, he's so talented.
He did.
He is.
Love his photos. Always loved his videos.
And he's a great guy, too. He's just tons of fun to hang out with. Super calm, relaxed. And
So logistically, you fly in to Anchorage?
Yeah, I flew into Anchorage.
And then Anchorage, Super Cub?
No, I flew into Anchorage, and then I got picked up, stayed the night, and then we flew in a 206.
Okay.
Out of Birchwood Airport, a little municipal airport out there.
And then you land, and from that point, are you backpacking?
So then we landed at a little camp, a mining camp, and then we got all of our gear dropped off and stuff, and then we got picked up from the Cub. Then we landed in the Cub out in the field, and then we hiked.
Yeah. When you land at that airstrip and you're at the point where you're starting to hike and you're starting to see the scenery, I mean, are you grasping it?
Well, I think I really grasped it opening morning when we had to do a big steep hike up a big steep, pretty nasty hill. Then I was like, holy crap, Alaska is.
Yeah, you're into it.
Yeah.
Was it a bigger country than you anticipated?
I think I did grasp that, like, when we started flying in the 206 out. It's just like, I was confused where I was even at.
Yeah.
Like, turned around, and I was just like, it's just so big and massive. Uh-huh. I think that's why I fell in love with it, though.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're physically prepared? You've been working at it?
Yeah. So the physical aspect, that was a headache a little bit before. I kind of probably overly prepared. I feel like there's no such thing as that, but I learned that the hard way.
But there is.
Yeah.
You can overtrain.
I did. And I like blew out my right knee like 4 months before.
Oh.
It was a little stressful.
I think I actually twisted it. And because I remember being at work and I like slipped and it twisted. And I felt this sharp pain in my knee. I was like, oh, I need to be careful. I don't want to jack up my knee for my sheep hunt. Well, I continued to train on it. I was probably a little hard. She was doing the training with me, and we took my son along. And there, it'd be like snowing, and we'd be like, we got to run. We'd be out there
drill
running
sergeant
in the snow.
It was too much.
Yeah. And we did the mountain tough thing. And like, if I missed
which
the day,
was great,
which was great, we loved it. But if I missed the day, we would be like, we got to do two today.
Oh, you were.
Yeah.
Was,
I was like,
he was too much.
In it.
He was too much.
And I think, so
doing it together?
Yeah. We did it. She
yeah,
did
we
it
did
with
it together.
Me.
And workouts were great. It was super fun. But yeah, he was like,
maybe a little
way
overkill.
Too intense.
And so I ended up like messing the alignment of my knee up. And then my patella was out of alignment. And so every time I was running and doing stuff, it was...
just kept going on it?
Yeah. And it was like a little hammer. Mm-hmm. And then one day I came home from work and the thing was like a balloon.
So how stressed are you then?
I'm like, it's time to settle down.
So stressed out. I ended up having to go to a specialist and they're like, you fractured your kneecap. So they're like, don't do anything for 6 weeks.
You're like, I have to.
Yeah, so I said, I got this, like, this is very important. Like,
yeah.
And so then she's bought a stationary bike.
She's like, the only thing you're allowed to do is, was first she told me I could ride a bike. And then she's like, actually, I don't, if you fall on it, you're going to break it all the way and then you're done for. So she's like, you get a stationary bike.
Yeah.
So I went and bought a stationary bike and I did that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do like work on my upper body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I got released, I think, 4 weeks or 6 weeks? 4 to 6 weeks before my hunt. And then I just focused on
hiking
with a weighted pack and working my way up slowly.
Yeah.
Your knee felt okay, though, at that point?
No, it always, it still to this day now bothers me.
No kidding.
Yeah.
To this day, you said?
Yeah. Yeah, wow. Yeah. And she said all that. Well, I used to race motorcycles, and I think that's a lot of it, too, down in Mexico and stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, all the cartilage in it is gone. She already told me I'm going to need a knee replacement, but I need to wait till I'm at least 50.
Tell you're done sheep hunting.
Huh?
Tell you're done sheep hunting.
Right. Tell them to, hopefully.
Yeah.
Wow. Hopefully I'm still going after that for sheep.
Yeah, you don't want your kneecap repaired. I've heard it's not good.
My dad did a knee replacement before we went Marco Polo hunting in Tajikistan. He was actually okay.
Really?
He timed it well enough.
Like his kneecap?
Yeah, I think it was a full knee replacement.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So how long was the recovery on that?
So he did it in January, and then literally we went... And in November that same year, so 11 months basically.
Okay.
And he confirmed him, like, is everything going to be good? And like, he got it because he wanted to perform in the mountains again.
Sure.
And he's like, afterwards, he was like, if I didn't do that, there's no way I could have done that hunt.
Really?
Like, I really need to do it. And it made me feel like a totally younger man. And then it made him motivate, you know, to keep working out and getting in shape and getting better.
And his knee's great still.
His knee's great right now, yeah. The funniest photo is I think I was actually headed to Sheep Show that year. And, he texted me a photo and I'm sure he was, you know, not there in his head, all the sorts of, you know, drugs or whatever from just going out of surgery. But he's like, I'm in sheep shape right now. I'm already ready to go. And he's like, Dad, you're in the car with mom right now. He's like, I got a picture of his leg. He's like, oh yeah, look, I can move it. And I'm like, yeah, you have a long way to go. So you can go sheep hunting. But he did all that work ahead of time, full knee replacement, and it was golden. So like, you can probably do it and then continue your sheep journey.
But you gotta be strategically planned.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was probably like, I was probably so annoying to her because I was so stressed like every day.
Yeah.
I was a little sick of hearing about the knee.
Yeah. Yeah. I know how that can be.
I mean, yeah, it was all blown fixated. Up.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. How many days are you planning this hunt? Like, how many days are you packing gear for?
It was a 10-day hunt.
10 days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and then, but that was another thing is talking to Justin. He was like, I have... you know, a week in between your hunt and the next one.
Oh, so you could.
He was like, if that's what it takes for you to be successful, we'll stay.
That's pretty cool. He didn't.
Like, whatever it takes for you to be. Yeah. And that was something that I was like, dude, this guy is solid. He's going to make sure to do everything he can to make sure I'm successful.
Mm-hmm. So you hike in. How far are you hiking in?
Well, the first place we went to, we hiked in, I think, like 7 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And then set up our camp from the airstrip. And in the second place, the pilot was able to land pretty close to where we could camp. You know, like,
oh, nice.
Yeah, that was pretty nice. It was about not even a quarter mile from the airstrip, probably. Hmm. And then we could hike straight from there and hunt drainages.
Yeah.
Because we had to get moved.
Yeah, I noticed that you moved early on in the hunt. Was that like right after opening day you moved or like the second day?
Yeah, so opening day we spotted a ram off in the distance. And then the next morning we went in and that's when we confirmed that he was sublegal.
Hmm.
And then so we had covered, but we during that time, that first opening day, we covered a lot of area and found a bunch of rams, but they're all little small rams. And so we called to get moved, and so that would have been the second day of the season.
Okay.
We got moved third day of the season, so just, that would have been the 13th.
And it's basically just because 12th. All everything's just young, nothing in this area.
Yeah,
you can't really hike probably anywhere else to go other places. And best decision was to be moved.
We probably could have gone a little bit farther, you know, one way, but Justin felt as though we were probably, it was a wasted effort. Like, let's go ahead and move to another area that he's hunted before and he knew of other sheep as well.
What's your thought right then? It's like just seeing small rams and like, now we got to move already.
Yeah. I mean, I was pretty optimistic and positive. You know, I was like, it's early in the hunt and I could hunt another 10 days plus.
Yeah.
So it didn't really weigh too much on me. I think even in the video, there's a clip that Calvin got where we actually see the sublegal ram and we confirm he's sublegal. And I'm like, well, let's pack up and move on. Huh. Let's go. Let's go to the next spot. Not big, like, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. And then step back, like, how cool was it to see your first doll?
Oh.
Like, what did that mean to you, like, seeing the first ram?
Do you remember what it was?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, first ones we saw were lambs and ewes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But still, that's super cool.
But yeah, to see that. And to be like, I'm actually doing this mm-hmm. after all these years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went at when I was 33 years old, 33 yeah. years old, and yeah. it was a dream since I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost didn't even feel real, I guess. Like, I'm actually doing this, and I'm actually here hunting in mm-hmm. Alaska, where I've always wanted to go, in the Alaska range, and I'm looking at sheep right now. You know, that I thought I'd never be obtainable to me.
Yeah. There's something about you. Mine was always moose, right? I wanted to go hunt. You saw a giant bull moose.
Yeah, I did see. We saw a couple, actually.
That was
yeah,
a great
some
bull.
Great bulls.
In the video. But I remember for me, I remember thinking you're there. You're in the moment. And I remember thinking, like, how do I captivate this? Like, I want to remember this, you know, because you want to take it in. It's something that you've dreamed about and I'm with you. It almost doesn't feel like you can grasp it. You can't mm-hmm. really like, is this real? Am I actually here? Mm-hmm. I'm seeing all these things and seeing these animals. I don't know how you do it exactly. Other than I think it's great that you have the video to go back and revisit that for memories. But I mean, it is, there's something to that. It's really captivating. It's just like, oh, I'm here. I'm actually yeah. here. I'm in the moment.
Well, that was another reason I wanted it to be videoed mm-hmm. is because I wanted to be able to, when yeah. I'm 70 years old, be able to look back on it and be like, that was yeah. a time in my life.
Mm-hmm. And the scenery is incredible.
Yeah. There's no bad photos taken in Alaska.
Yeah. No. I mean, I like the film, but I think what makes that, at least in, you know, from a third party watching it, it's just the visuals are so incredible.
Yeah.
It's so green and you've got the dark gray shell, you know, white sheep on that background. It's just an incredible environment.
You know, and I kind of relate like Alaska, probably any Alaska hunt, but especially like a doll sheep hunt to like when I was racing down to Mexico, it's like a team effort
mm-hmm.
and everything has to be, you know, taken care of and in order and organized. It's yeah, you go in there, it's like a band of brothers kind of going in there with a goal and a mission. And I kind of like, I like that kind of style hunt mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. feeling.
Yeah. How much pressure were you feeling? I was curious. Cause you've saved all this money. You've put all the time, all
the effort.
There was
a lot of pressure. Yeah, definitely a lot of pressure, especially I missed the ram.
Especially after the knee thing.
The yeah. knee thing. Yeah. That compounded the pressure. Mm-hmm. And the like uncertainty of like, is my knee going to hold up?
Yeah.
But it definitely I got a lot more pressure when I missed that ram. Yeah. I missed the ram on.
How did that feel?
Oh, we all were. I mean, it was a rush shot. We kind of came over. We're a side hilling, and this ram popped up out of nowhere. And so I didn't have enough time to really set up adequately. And I probably shouldn't have taken a shot, I guess. But I had an opportunity, and I took it. And luckily, I cleanly missed. And that's, I mean, that's part of hunting, right? You're mm-hmm. gonna, if someone it says is. They've never missed, then they're lying.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, after that, I was pretty low. Yeah, to say the least.
Broke down mentally. Like yeah. Just thinking like that could have been
my one and only opportunity, yeah. and it's gone. I think I even reached her and said that. Like, I think that could have been my one opportunity, and I just blew it.
What were your, did you, like, respond back? What was your advice?
No, you didn't.
She tried to keep me, like, my mind straight.
Left. It's not over yet. It's mm-hmm. not over till it's over. You had time.
Yeah, so I guess I didn't really have like any doubts in like Justin or Calvin or anyone. I mean, we all were down after that, but I had a little bit. I was a little down and doubts in myself. Then I'm like, man, if I could, like, am I gonna be able to make the shot? Am I so excited that I can't? I'm gonna choke again.
Were you? I mean, why do you think you missed?
The lack of being able to, the time being able to prepare, you know, rushed, like I didn't have a rear support. I didn't have time to grab a rear support.
Right.
And it was a pretty steep uphill shot.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, I don't think you actually prepared enough for the angles that you were going to have to shoot.
Yeah, I should have probably been a little bit better.
Like that was a learning curve for you.
I think that's the case generally in hunting. Yeah. I know in bow hunting, it's definitely, I would say I shoot thousands and thousands of arrows every summer and hardly any of them at, you know, up and down angles that I have harvested animals in the field. It's time. It takes time, and you have to have the equipment, and you got to pack a target uphill or downhill or whatever it is.
It's hard to simulate.
And I just don't think as hunters, we generally put that much time and effort into preparing for that kind of stuff.
It's so easy just to go to range and lay down and shoot.
Yeah. Or go to the archery range and fling arrows at 45 yards, you know, downrange. So I don't think it's you. I think it's everybody.
Yeah. I think moving forward though, I'm going to be better. Like I know it's a pain, but go for a hike. And like shoot at a rock, like in a obviously safe environment, sure. But like, and shoot at a rock or something and try to simulate it a little more. So, but those hills are so steep. Those mountains are so steep, you know, it's really hard to even simulate Alaska.
Yeah. What, any doubt in your equipment, your gun? Cause that's where it would get me. I would be like, was that me? Was it the gun?
I mean, I checked my gun after I flew, of course. But yeah, after I missed, I'm like, was it me? Did I get a bad range? Mm-hmm. Like I was rushed. Did I shoot the range behind him?
Yeah.
Cause I shot over him, you know? So you're
thinking like, oh yeah, maybe I got so excited, ranged above it, use that as my.
And logistics. I only got a time to get one range. I'd rather get three or four.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you shot over the top.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then did that ram just clear country?
So then, yeah, he took off, and then I had one more shot opportunity at him, and then after that, he went right over the top, and he was gone. And so then we spent the next few days searching for him. Well, we spent the rest of that day trying to see if we could turn him back up. We checked where he could have potentially went, but couldn't find him. Went back, kind of got a regroup, kind of tried to get, I think, the morale back up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Had some food, and the next day, we went and looked for him again. And then the next day, the weather was kind of crummy. And then in the afternoon, it burned off. And I was pretty fortunate on my hunt. I didn't have horrible weather days. They were typically like in the morning for a few hours and it would burn off with a couple little weather events. Most of the weather was when we were actually traveling out. And then while we were looking for that ram, we came across a band of five rams with two legal rams. So we're like, you know, I was like, I'm not going to turn down a legal ram to try to continue.
So you were seeing other sheep then at least.
Yeah, like, we were.
Keep you actively engaged.
I think we saw sheep every day, but one,
That's nice.
Yeah. And whether they're legal or not, obviously.
Sure. But,
yeah. And it was cool. We got to see some grizzly bears. We got to see some moose, some caribou. So it was a great, it was a great overall experience. I love it. I mean, enough that I went back as a packer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Talk us through the day when you actually killed your sheep.
So we were hiking, looking for that one ram that I missed. And then, actually Calvin came around the corner. He's like, there's five rams right there. And so we creeped up and got crawled into a little area where we could get close to him and, watched him. And we confirmed that there was two legal rams. And then as soon as we got them confirmed that there was two legal rams, they all bedded down with the biggest ram, like in the middle. Mm. And then we sat there for 3.5 hours.
Of course, that's always how it goes.
How far out?
So at that time they were about 455. And then, they fed up after about 3.5 hours and weather was starting to come in. So I was getting a little stressed about that. Cause you could see some fog kind of starting to come down.
Any attempt to like try to get closer, cut the distance, or are you thinking at that point, like this is where we need to be. Like this is a makeable shot.
Well, at that like 400, 450, I was like, yeah, okay, that's doable. But then they stood up and they started walking up away from us. And I remember getting a range at 5. I'm like, okay, I'm getting like kind of outside of this. Like I still feel confident shooting because I've had plenty of time to set up now. I've had 3.5 hours. So I had a rear support. I was comfortable. I even had time to dig out like a little area in the side of the mountain where I could sit a little better.
Mm-hmm.
And that ram stood up on like a little perch at 550, but it was like corrected to 522. So I felt fairly confident. and told Justin, yeah, let's go for it. Take a shot. I feel confident. I've had the time and I feel rock solid. And the first shot I hit him, he was kind of quartering away, hit him kind of in the back in front of the rear quarter. And it came up and he was dead on the first shot.
Yeah.
But you know, if he's standing, I'm going to continue to shoot until.
Exactly. That's always the best advice. Yeah.
Just, you know, I don't want to see him suffer. And also I don't want to see something, the situation go negative. So,
Those shots where you're waiting for an animal to stand up, it's interesting because you get within range and the animal's there and there's that first level of adrenaline, like it spikes. There's the animal, here I am, I'm within range. And you get a chance to process and work through, okay, you know, best opportunity is maybe going to be to wait for him to stand. You have the 3 hours or whatever time it might be to like get set up. And in that time frame, you have the ability to like calm your nerves and get back into like a better level headspace.
Yeah.
But the instant that animal stands back up, at least for me.
Oh, it spikes.
Spikes.
Yep.
It's tenfold. I'm like, but freaking out.
The good thing is with that amount of time, I had time to like dry fire. Yeah. Relax and like have a good rear support. And like I had so much more than I did the other shot.
So you did some dry firing?
Yeah, you were able to control the situation. So earlier, like you, I don't know, you dug out a little area, got really comfortable laying down, everything probably laid out how you needed it to be. And
I had everything, I had extra bullets beside me, everything ready to go.
Rear support, dry firing, that's one of the best tips ever. Like I'm glad you said you did that because that's a game changer. Even mentally, just to get in the zone. Make sure everything's golden.
Make sure my thumb placement on my stock's the right spot, everything, you know? And that for me, doing a dry fire just like calms my nerves instantly. It just settles me.
Yeah. Did you feel like missing the sheep, the first sheep, you missed it? Kind of, you were able to like check some balances, make sure that the second shot, you run through all the things that maybe mentally you missed or didn't 100%. Have an opportunity to do?
Yeah, most definitely. I know that like after that, I was like, I am not taking a rush shot. I'm going to go, I should not have compromised what, in the situation, I got so excited that I was like, oh, I'm going to just, I'll take the shot. Okay. And then, afterwards I thought, well, that's not normally me. And that's not what I'm going to do. If I presented another opportunity, I'm going to go ahead and relax and, go through. And it worked out perfect because I had all the time in the world, you know,
do you have any wind to deal with?
There was a little bit of wind. There was a cross breeze, probably like a 10 mile an hour cross breeze. So it kind of, you could actually in the film, you can actually kind of see where it drifted the bullet a little bit from where I was aiming. Yeah.
There's nothing like that missed shot regret. Like when you, when you rush something and you get so excited and you talk yourself into taking a shot that, you know, you aren't maybe prepared to take.
Yep.
And then it doesn't go the way that you'd hope, because at that point it is a hope. You're just hoping that it works out. Cause I'm speaking from experience. I've done this. Like, I hope this works out. I think it might. I'm gonna try it.
And that's where I was at. Yeah.
And I've been there. I mean, I know this frame of mind well. There's nothing like that post regret where you're just like kicking your own ass. You're like, why did I do that? I know better than that. I'm better than that. I've done it so many times.
You're disappointed in yourself. Yeah.
And here's the thing. I don't think it ever gets, at least I try to learn from it, but I'm still prone to that.
Yeah.
I don't think you ever fully get over it.
Especially on a hunt like this where it's just a lot of pressure to be successful.
It's so much pressure.
Do you feel like you could fully enjoy that experience for what it was, given like the pressure you put on yourself, or did you, or could you work that out in your mind?
I did. I did have to work that out in my mind. I think I had to consider the fact, especially after I missed, like if I go home empty handed, I need to still enjoy this. Like, like the money's already spent. I'm not getting it back. So don't ruin the hunt and don't ruin the experience on top of that by holding a value, like a price tag over it.
Yep. Smart.
So I kind of like, I think that night in my tent, I had to kind of recheck myself after I missed that ram.
Were you guys keeping in touch the whole time?
Yeah.
Pretty well. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I could, that's something that the inReach is great for, especially with a family, you know?
Yeah. It's a game changer.
Sydney, you getting updates and what are you thinking?
Yeah. I never had any doubts at all. I was like,
but I think there was a time where you told me when I got home, you were like,
Of course I joked. If you don't get a ram, don't come home at all. You know, but I mean, of course I'm not serious, but I really don't think I ever had any doubts in you. I think I did tell you, like, cause you were upset about missing, like same thing. If nothing else, you're like seeing some places that nobody sees.
Yeah.
Really, like very few people in the world get to see what you saw. And it's really incredible. So don't just enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Enjoy it for what it is. And mm-hmm. If you miss, you miss. And
well, I think when I killed my ram, okay. You were like,
I was a little relieved. Yeah. But
you pretty excited when you got the message. Did you message her straight away?
I was so excited. She was the first person. Yeah.
I was so excited.
Do you remember where you were at? Yep. Doing?
I was at my parents' house swimming with our son and yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
I was excited.
Yeah, I think I messaged her. I messaged a good friend of mine, and then I messaged Lorenzo and let him know.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Just describe that emotion dump that you probably felt right after you saw your ram go down.
Oh,
you can see you turned back to the camera a little bit, but like, what were you feeling in that moment of time?
Calvin captured that pretty good. After I shot, it was like, I think I even said in the film, I was like, this doesn't even feel like it's real. Like, I can't even really put words to how I felt.
You honestly. Probably blacked out.
Yeah. I remember Calvin got a shot that I took after I took the shot and I saw the sheep fall. I turned back and my hair's all crazy and
it's so wild.
I'm just like so relieved and so excited.
Elated.
Yeah. Elated is a good word. Yeah. That feeling, if you could can it and sell it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've said that so many times. Like that is the best thing ever. Like when I shot my moose, I said that in the film we premiered the other night, I totally kind of forgot I said that, but it was the same thing. If I could just take this moment, bottle it up and open it up whenever I want to like feel this joy in life again, like if you're ever down, I just crack it open. Like that's what life is, should be just bottling those moments up, cherishing them.
You only get so many of those though.
Yeah.
There's only just a handful that you'll ever get, I think. And it's just, those don't come, they're not fleeting. They come from dreaming about that kind of thing since you're 12 years old.
Yeah, that's true.
And then all the financial saving and the prep. And I mean that the joy only comes from all of the prep and all the dreaming that culminates in that moment. Yep. And you only get so many of them.
Then mm-hmm. I think there are so many ups and downs too, like with the knee injury and then missing the ram. And so it makes it that much more gratifying, I feel like, and impacting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How long did it take you to get over to your ram?
It took, cause we had to go down and around to get to it as there's kind of a nasty steep area. I think it took us about an hour and 15 minutes.
And then walking up to it, you're starting to see it as you get closer.
I was so excited. I
put your hands on it the first time.
I freaking tried to run and fell. So I was so excited. Like a little kid.
Yeah.
I shot a buck one time. I've told this maybe before, but I shot a buck with a muzzleloader, just dream buck for me. I was so excited. I forgot to even zip up my backpack. So I got between there and my buck and I had to turn around and backtrack the trail that I came in on and just shit scattered everywhere.
This is a yard sale.
Yeah, just a yard sale. I dropped everything in my backpack, the backpack open, just so excited. So I've been there. Do you remember like touching that ram for the first time?
Yeah, to be able to be like, this is mine. Yeah. This is my ram. Like, I get to call it mine, and it's my reward. And that feeling. I mean, but the bad thing is now I want it more. I want it again.
Got the shoot bug right there.
Oh no!
Oh no!
That's supposed to be it.
No. I want it all the time now. I want it every year.
Yeah.
Course.
What is it about sheep? People talk about sheep. I mean, for me, you asked me out in the warehouse earlier today and we talked when we were at the expo about opportunities to maybe draw a sheep tag or go on a sheep hunt. I've never been bitten by the sheep bug. I've never been on a sheep hunt either, really, other than Awdad. You call that a sheep?
I call that a sheep.
It's a really cool sheep. It's like a desert sheep hunt.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. What is it about sheep for you? Like, what is that sheep bug if you could put it into word?
I've hunted, desert sheep before, not personally, but alongside other people and helped other people. But, if I had to pick between, a Rocky Mountain or a desert or a thin horn, it's a thin horns because of the adventure, And, I think what, for me, again, going back to when I was like 12, it was the appeal to me was how remote and the logistics and how being in Alaska is the best feeling, as you guys know, is the best feeling. It's like there's no one around, the air's fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's just beautiful and it's just peaceful. Like every part of it to me is peaceful.
Yeah. And they are rare. I mean, they're a rare animal anymore. I remember when I worked for the DWR, when somebody would bring in, because you have to mandatory check your sheep in. Mm-hmm. We would plug the sheep that come in. But I remember when they would bring a desert ram in to the office, everybody would come around. We'd all want to check out the ram. Just look at it, feel it, pick it up, handle it. There's just something about it.
Yeah. I don't know how you explain it, but just holding sheep. Like I want to hold all of them and look at all of them.
Yeah,
that's why I like going to some of the expos, to get to see some pretty cool stuff.
That's cool. They are definitely rare.
Packout was, how was that?
Packout wasn't horrible. I took some of the meat, the head, and then Justin took the hide, and then the rest of the meat, and then him and I packed it out together, and it was a couple miles from our camp, and then, like I said, about a quarter mile from the airstrip, so it wasn't horrible. But we were loaded down, I guess, pretty heavy, and it's pretty steep. So I just took it slow. And I took it slow because of my knee, though.
Yeah,
you know, I didn't want to like, that's all I needed was, like, now I'm on cloud nine and then blow out my knee.
Yeah, you're not thinking clearly.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so I was like, okay, zoned out. Yeah, just slow down. Slower is faster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one scene there in the film where you've got the ram on your pack, and you guys are walking kind of a zigzag pattern. You're side-hilling it down this big, you know, black, shaley-looking slope, and you've got the valley below, and it's just green. You got the sheep on your back and your rifle. And I thought, man, that is like the quintessential Alaskan visual for anybody.
What's funny about that scene right there is it sucks. It was so steep and rocky. Calvin dropped his camera and the thing rolled to the bottom.
Ooh, what?
Yeah, I got broke.
Ouch.
Oh, I'm going to have to give him a hard time about that next time I see that.
He like went to go set it down, grab it, something else out of his pack, and the thing took off.
Yeah.
And fell. So you got a great shot, but at the cost of the camera.
Yeah. It is a great shot. Up. That might have been one of my very favorite shots from the whole film. It's just, it is to me, at least watching, it's the quintessential Alaskan sheep adventure in a frame.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was super cool.
He did a great job.
Talk to me about eating that sheep over the campfire. Like, how'd that sheep taste being out there?
Yeah, I mean, I thought, well, I'm pretty good at making fires until you go to Alaska. That really educates you quickly. Yeah,
you get humbled.
Everything's wet.
You definitely get humbled. Everything's wet. It's so hard. So we had a pretty, an all right little fire, enough to cook some meat, basically. So that took a while. It took us forever to get that dang thing started just to cook some meat for... to have some fun with that, but it was great. You know, Dall sheep is awesome to eat. Kind of like,
well,
yeah,
it's good.
It's probably my favorite, you know, at a cost, obviously, but
sure. Yeah,
it's the most expensive meat. Yeah,
that's probably why it tastes so good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we eat game meat every night nearly.
Yeah.
And I mean, what would you say? Or is it rank? I mean, we've had elk, we have had tule elk, Rockies.
Personally, I like antelope.
Yeah.
Me too. We need some more people on that train, because there's a lot of people that go back and forth.
Like, it's
the worst or the best.
I'm glad to hear you say that.
I agree. It's the best.
Who did we have in here a week or two ago? And they were, is it Jim from the Backfire?
Yeah, I think it might have been.
Yeah, we were talking about that. That's what he said was antelope. I think he said antelope.
I think so.
Or maybe I told him mine was antelope. Yeah. I can't remember one way or the other, but that one's my favorite.
Yeah, I really like antelope.
Darren discredits antelope.
I'd say antelope, elk, and then the sheep.
Yeah.
Third, I think for me, sheep was because it's kind of like a sweet taste.
Sure.
Yeah. That's what I remember too.
Yeah.
So you get out, you get to the field. Are you most excited just to get home and see your wife and kid?
Yeah, I definitely was excited, but I also wasn't like not taking it all in. You know, like I didn't want to rush home and have the feeling of feeling rushed home to the point that I wasn't taking what I was going to maybe experience once in my lifetime all in. But yeah, I definitely was missing. Missing home. And then, it was like the hunt's over. We get picked up from the cub. We get flown out. And at one point, I think it reflects that in the film, is when we moved from the first spot to the second spot, weather was coming in between. And it was most important to get Justin and I. Obviously, we wanted Calvin to go along. But if someone was going to get stuck, it was going to be Calvin. He almost gets stuck.
So you almost couldn't have your camera guy almost got, didn't continue with you.
Yeah, because the cub, we could only take one guy at a time. And so the pilot was he was a phenomenal pilot, and he was able to squeeze through the storm and get Calvin just in time, barely. So we were like, left Calvin a gun and left Calvin a couple freeze dried meals in case and a tent.
I've done that.
Yeah, it trails definitely yeah, down
did
there.
Did you get stuck for like 7 days? Something like that?
Let me think. How many? Five, I guess, after they picked up those other guys. Yeah, total. Mm-hmm. It's interesting when you say that, when you're talking about flying home. Just like that trip home and just remembering, you know, the experiences that you went through. I remember being on the tundra. You know, I'd been there, I think, 13 or 14 days at that point, I remember. And I remember thinking, I was sitting there on my tent. It's kind of like next to this little landing strip. And, you know, I'd been in there for a number of days kind of on my own, just hanging out, looking at caribou and, you know, walking down to the creek and getting water, just anything I could do to occupy my time, fleshing cape, you know, cooking, eating caribou. But I remember thinking like, oh, I'm so ready to go home. I'm yep. dirty. I've been successful. I've done everything I could think of. Like, I'm lonely. I'm bored. You know, I've read this book twice. I just am ready to get home, you know? And I remember then being on a plane from between Seattle and LA and like looking out the window and just being like, oh, I'd do anything to be back on the tundra, like alone. Yeah. I would do anything. I would love to be back there. You know, it goes so quick when you're actually out there looking back on it.
That's what I always try to think about. Like, it's a couple of weeks of my life that, mm-hmm. I may only get to experience a couple times in my life.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So don't, you know, it's easy to start rushing and be like, I need to get home to my family, mm-hmm. and I want to be home to my family and I miss them, but I also need to appreciate where I'm at and what
exactly.
I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the best feeling in the world when I get home and my son's like, so excited to see me and give me mm-hmm. a hug, mm-hmm. you know,
And then after priceless. A couple of weeks, you're like, oh, I'm ready to go back to Alaska. Yep.
Yeah. A couple of weeks, I'm like, dang, I wish I'm, you know, thinking about Alaska again.
So you got to bring the sheep home, horns, everything, skull, mm-hmm. all the meat.
Yeah, yeah. So I just, when we got back into town, I just went ahead and did like, I normally butcher all my own meat, but mm-hmm. in this situation, I just wanted to bring back as much meat. So I just had it butchered mm-hmm. and then put it in a fish box.
Gotcha.
Checked it. And the horns, I just put it in my luggage bag.
Yep. Carry on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't fit it in the carry on, but I could. But it.
I would have bought another seat next to me and been like, "All right, this is my
that's a good
best
thought,
friend. Going to sit next to me the whole time."
You probably could have.
Yeah, I could.
Never want to leave sight of your ram. You know, yeah. Keep with you at all times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it pretty cool to see his sheep come home?
Oh yeah.
After you guys put all the time and effort and savings
like I said,
into
it, was like just maybe not just as rewarding for me, but I feel like it was extremely rewarding for me to see him come home with that and successful and just. See the film and just hear about it all. It was really cool.
Yeah, my ultimate dream is obviously like I'd love to take my son on a sheep mm-hmm. hunt one day somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be really cool.
I don't know how that'll look in the future, but that's my long-term goal.
Mm-hmm. Man, if that's a goal, it'll probably happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you've already proved that if you dream about something long enough, you can make it work. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if that's the dream and that's the goal, I think you can make it happen.
Obviously, I guess it has to be up to him too.
Yeah,
but, yeah. He has to want to do it. Sure. You got to start taking him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, very cool. Do you have any other questions, Brady? I'm glad we got a chance to sit down and talk to you guys.
No, this was really fun.
Yeah, yeah, thank you.
Do we know when the film's coming out?
I don't know exact date. Cody, do you know drop date? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So look for that. Like I said, Memories for Home. Super cool title. I'm glad you guys got a chance to stop in and visit with us. Yeah. I'm glad you made it. That was
Thanks
fun.
For
it was fun
us.
To get a perspective of a spouse that obviously loves her husband very much to be able to put that much into it. Very cool to listen to. I think to me anyway, it's really neat that somebody put their full thought, their full mind, their full effort into making something happen as a partnership. I mean, I think you could probably say this is as much yours as it is his.
I feel like it is.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it is too, just objectively listening.
Talk, yeah.
Yes, I think it's really cool that you guys put your time and effort and money together and you made a dream happen, which reality is a true dream, something that you wanted for so long. So super cool to do that. I'm glad we got a chance to hear your story.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate you guys coming down.
Thanks for having us. It was a great time.
Yeah, and safe travels.
Thank you.
Yeah.